Welcome to the Rockstar Achievers Podcast with your host, Catherine M. White, founder and CEO of Accelerated Results 365. If you're an overachiever who's ready to hear what today's bleeding edge successful professionals are doing to create success in their business, you've come to the right place. On the show, Catherine interviews rockstar achievers who share their incredible tips, such as how they plow through roadblocks, outsmart the competition, grow a flourishing business, and reach unparalleled levels of performance. So kick back and get ready for a power-packed, insightful discussion with today's rockstar achiever.
We are very fortunate to have Ruth Nicholson with us today, who is the manager of Nicholson Facilitation and Associates, LLC. She is also an internationally certified professional facilitator, visual and graphics facilitator, certified assessor, and trained mediator in private practice in the Snohomish County, Washington area. She is also a member of the U.S. Institute for Environmental Conflict Resolution, which is a federal roster of mediators. She holds a master's degree in public administration and offers over 25 years' experience in organizational development, facilitation, conflict resolution, public policy, and nonprofit organization management. Ruth has regularly served as both a lead facilitation and project manager responsible for project team management and staff supervision, meeting design and collaborative agenda development, document and meeting notes production, and project contracting timeline and budget. In addition to offering facilitation services, Ruth has provided facilitation training in North America as a one-on-one facilitation coach trainer, and at international conferences in Africa, Asia, the Caribbean, Europe, and North America. She has also served as an international assessor evaluating candidates for professional facilitator certification in Africa, North America, and Asia. Ruth Nicholson is the co-author of When There Are No Easy Answers, A Facilitator's Guide to Designing Complex Events, which is based on input from over 100 facilitators around the world, and the article Post-Agreement Conflict, A Reflection of the Causes and the Development of Skills to Address It. Welcome, Ruth. We are very excited to have you with us today, and we would like to hear more about what it is that you do. I mean, it just sounds like you do so much, and it sounds pretty complex.
Well, thank you, Catherine. I'm really glad to be here with you. Really, at its simplest, it's about people, organizations, and getting results. So when you boil all of it down, I really sort of have three areas of practice. I have my teaching and training, and that component, I really enjoy giving people practical skills, simple things they can do that make it easier to work with the people in their organization so that they actually can deliver on the kinds of programs that are near and dear to their hearts. So I like practical training. My mother used to call every time I had a new client and say, well, are they going to be better off next week than they were last week? And that was the bar. The second part of my practice has traditionally been in the area of environmental issues and natural resource issues, where there's often a fair amount of conflict. So you have multiple organizations, multiple agendas, and a unique mix of technical and scientific, along with the values that people bring to natural resources and environmental issues. And again, it's about helping people work either within their organization or across organizations to do things with the environment that are good for communities and good for the environment. The third piece of my practice is actually all of that just what I call in a different color jersey, because it has a lot to do with children and youth sports. And again, working with organizations, many of whom have lots of volunteers, lots of parent volunteers, and they're trying to get their organization to work well to deliver on good experiences for their kids. Again, it's about people learning how to work together so that they can get stuff done, So your meetings are more productive, your programs are targeted, and when you have to have those difficult conversations, you can actually have them and still have a good working relationship and still produce the kinds of programs that are important to you.
Wow, thank you for summarizing that in a more simplistic fashion. That sounds fabulous. And Ruth, how did you come about getting into this field of work?
I like to call myself the accidental facilitator. Because if you had told me when I was in junior high or high school or even college, you know, when you grow up, you're going to be a facilitator, I would have said, well, what the heck is that? It's in my DNA, I think, because I grew up in a family where most of the men in the family were clergy, or Scottish Presbyterian, which meant that everybody's house had a committee in the living room. My grandfather and my father and my uncles and everybody. And so a survival skill in my family was working with people in groups. And I didn't realize until I was well into my 30s that skill of working with people in groups is not something that most people grow up with. But in my household, that's what my mom did and my dad did and my grandma did. And so I was working actually as a forester. My first university degree is in forest science. And most foresters don't go into forestry to talk to people. And we had a huge controversy here in the Northwest around the spotted owl. And the issue was, how do you manage the woods with a spotted owl in it? And whether you were a timber company or the federal government or a state government or a tribe, it generated a whole lot of conflict. And I actually was laid off not once but twice, because foresters were losing their jobs by the drove. And I ended up at the Environmental Protection Agency, the Federal Environmental Protection Agency. And they sent me back to facilitate a group at the Forest Service, which was all about how do we manage the woods with a spotted owl in it. And all of a sudden, the things that my mother had taught me unconsciously as a little kid were what was making a difference for those people in that room and trying to resolve the issues, both technical and value-based, around how do you manage woods in the Pacific Northwest. And that then became a career in facilitation and mediation. And over time, I was with the federal government and some private consulting firms and ended up out on my own. And the last piece of the story, well, up to date, is when I had kids. I have two sons, and they played sports. They were soccer nuts. And all of a sudden, as a volunteer, soccer clubs would come to me and say, you know, we're having trouble with our board of directors, or we're having trouble with this conflict, or could you help us? You do it over there. Could you do it over here? And all of a sudden, that blossomed into not quite a second career, or maybe it's my third career, in helping youth sports organizations do, you know, their version of how do you manage a spotted owl in the woods, which is how do you have good youth sports organizations and avoid some of the heartaches and the pitfalls of parent conflicts and pushing kids to excel too soon, when it's really at the younger ages, learning the skill and learning to love the sport. So, like I said, I think it's just the family DNA in a different color jersey.
Mm-hmm. I can see that. And so you really honed in on using your experiences, the things that you learned, and recognizing your own talents. And it sounds like you take that into what you do, like you're talking about the youth and sports and not pushing them, but rather helping them to realize where their skills are and helping them to expand on those skills. Would you say that's correct?
Yeah, yeah. And it's the same theme, whether you're talking about, you know, scientists and nuclear waste at the Hanford Nuclear Reservation, or you're talking about the Little League and how do we help kids who are going through puberty and going through that, you know, clumsy stage that we all have gone through, and still retain a love of the sport and a love of athletics and being physically active. Yeah, that's helping people play to their strengths and be successful doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can see where that playing to your strengths, it can be anywhere in sports, in your organizations, your communities. Beautiful. So as you went through this journey to get to where you're at, what are some of the roadblocks that you faced?
One of the roadblocks that I've always faced is actually being female. And my mother never set that up that way, but I come from a family of mostly males. I don't have sisters. I have one female cousin out of the dozen cousins I have.
Wow.
I'm a Title IX kid. We were not allowed to play sport when I was a kid in West Texas. And we had a small little fight about, yes, girls can play soccer. And so I was one of the first soccer referees and assigners. And, you know, it was, I guess, a bit groundbreaking. I went to forestry school. Forestry school is not full of women even now, although when I went in the late 70s, early 80s, there were even fewer of us. And even now, I work with scientists and engineers and a lot of coaches, a lot of athletic coaches. All of those are fields that are traditionally more male than female. I think the other challenge has been that what I do isn't flashy. It isn't a magnet for attention. Heck, it's not even sexy. it's useful and it's valuable, but helping people see that is also a challenge. That, you know, it doesn't have to be that hard. But what I do is a lot like being a referee in a sporting match, right? If the referee does a good job, you don't notice the referee's there. You know, you're watching the game, you're cheering for your team, nobody gets hurt. Hey, this is great. If the ref screws up, then everybody notices the ref and has an opinion about it. And,
right.
And being a facilitator is very much like that. Because if you really ace that piece of work, if people come together, they come to agreement, they design a great program, you can tell as they leave the room, the energy level will be high. It won't be that dragging, oh gosh, we've been in this meeting all day and all we can do is wait to get out of here. But they'll leave the room and there'll be a buzz. I mean, literally, the energy will be high and you'll hear people say, did you see what we did? You know, we're really looking forward to following up next week or doing this thing. And your name won't be in the sentence as the person who designed that process or facilitated that meeting or helped them reach that place. Mm-hmm. When they own it and it's theirs and they're excited and they're proud of it, you know you've done a really good job. But the challenge is, since your name is not in that sentence from a marketing standpoint or do you remember that you had some help getting there, that's always a little bit of a challenge because mm-hmm. you're often the afterthought. Even though what you've done is make it possible for them to come together and be successful. And that's sort of a perennial. It's sort of like inviting people over to supper. You know, and you cook a great meal and you set the table and it's really pretty and the atmosphere is great. And, you know, you can't make them eat, but if they do eat and they do have fun, they'll remember the people and the party and the, you know, and they might not remember some of the foundational stuff that made that happen. But it's still a great meal.
Absolutely. So how do you overcome that that sense of, well, I guess like you're not getting the recognition that you deserve. So how do you work with that and find the strength to keep going and to recognize the value that you're offering for these people?
Some days are easier than others. I think you have to have confidence in yourself and in there's a genuine caring that lives within the people that do this sort of work. And so there's celebration in other people's success. And for example, with my sports stuff, I have different coaches and different directors of coaching that I'll work with. And I will make the time to go see them and their teams when they play. And it surprises people, but it makes an impression that helps them remember you when they need you. So two examples. One, a little more than a year ago, year and a half maybe, I was going to visit my son who now lives in Arizona. And I had a coach that I had worked with online for a while. And he had a little girls team who was playing their last game of soccer for the season. And I said, hey, I'm going to be in Arizona. Are your girls playing? He says, yeah, they're playing on Friday night. I said, well, I'm flying in on Friday. Can my son and I come watch your girls? He says, you don't know them. I said, well, I know you. And it's about supporting the children, right? Right. And doggone it, I never met him in person. And my son and I caught an Uber and went out to the soccer field and cheered for his girls. He's like, you flew in from Washington State and the first thing you did after you got off the plane was come to watch my girls? I said, well, the point is supporting our kids. In a couple of weeks, I have a community college coach that I befriended at a coaching course. He's having some challenges with coaching young women who are just out of high school, just entering college and making that whole life transition from I live at home to now I'm in charge of like my whole schedule. Mm-hmm. And he said, would you come out? And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to spend a whole day with him. In September, they have a jamboree and it's about a 4-hour drive from where I am. And it's like, yeah, I'll come out. You want me to cheer for your girls? We'll be there. Turns out one of the other coaches I'm working with is the opposing team coach. So I have a lot of young women to cheer on that day. I can't lose that game. But it's about being present and caring and finding ways to show that. So when those folks say, you know what, I have an organizational challenge, they know who to call and they know who to trust. And I get a kick out of seeing them successful.
So the big key for you is building connections.
Yes.
Wonderful. And as you are building connections and you're working with these people, what kind of roadblocks do you see them facing as your clients?
I think one of the biggest challenges they face, regardless of what field they're in or what program or organization they work with, is finding themselves in a place where it's uncomfortable and painful and yet being more afraid of change and what that could look like as compared to just staying in the current pain. And they'll choose current pain over the risk or the uncertainty of making a change to something they can't quite imagine. And so helping people see, yes, I'm acknowledging your pain. I understand that it's uncomfortable, and it doesn't have to be that way. That with small steps, simple tools, practical techniques, you can make the situation better for yourself, for your organization, for the people who you're serving. And sometimes it has to go very small and very slow, and I get privately kind of impatient with that. But it has to work for them. People are going to do things for their reasons, not for your reasons, even if you think it's, you know, the greatest thing since sliced bread. Mm-hmm. They've got to do it for their reasons. And so helping find their interests and how to satisfy those, which is not only the secret to building good programs, it's actually the secret to mediation, is you find people's interests and you find different ways to satisfy those interests, and it can work like magic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Great point that you've made there. The important thing that I heard is that peace and people will do things for their reasons, and being able to come in and listen and find out what it is that their needs are, what it is that their wants are, and be able to work with them. And I also really appreciate that you were very open and authentic in saying that sometimes it can be a small and slow process and you can get a little frustrated with that. But yet you also recognize the importance of that and that you are able to set yourself aside and set aside what it is that you want, set aside the excitement that you have in perhaps a great idea that you have. And that's not always easy. So that is definitely a great skill to have.
Yeah, well, because ultimately if the solution is going to stick, whether it's in your program or a mediation, you have to own it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're the one that has to live with it, right? So
absolutely.
Ultimately, it kind of doesn't matter what I think,
mm-hmm.
right? Because I'm not the one living with it. And when I was working on the paper on post-agreement conflict, we looked at a number of the factors that lead to the conflict reemerging. And looking at relationships with people and, you know, are you doing it for your reasons or somebody else's reasons? And when I used to teach conflict resolution to third graders, because the elementary school across the street from my house, every classroom had a peace table in the corner, and that's where kids could go to resolve issues.
Mm-hmm.
And if two children were having difficulty, they could ask a teacher to help them, or they could ask a fifth grader, because the fifth graders had their own little mediation, student mediation cadre. And so we started teaching the kids in third grade how to solve conflict, so when they were fifth graders, they were, you know, pretty hot stuff. And the whole nugget revolves around the story around an orange. And quickly, I would show up in class with one orange, and I'd get two kids to help me. And I'd say, hey, I have an orange. Does anybody want the orange? And these two students would, oh, yes, 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 we want the orange. And they would come up, and I'd say, uh-oh, I only brought one. What should I do? And the class would tell me, cut it in half. And on cue, these two little kids who were in on it, both of them would be unhappy. Cutting it in half was not an acceptable solution. And I'd look back at the class, and I'd say, what am I going to do now? They don't like that idea. And then there would be quiet. And being quiet is always a little tough, right? But mm-hmm. I would be quiet, and they would squirm and squirm and squirm, and that you could feel the discomfort, right? We now have conflict over the orange. And finally, somebody would say, why do they want the orange? Well, we didn't ask that question, so I'd ask one little kid, why do you want the orange? And they'd say, oh, I'm hungry. And I want all the orange because I'm really hungry. well, that's a pretty good interest. And I'd look at the other little one, and I'd say, well, why do you want the orange? And they'd say, well, it's my daddy's birthday, and his favorite cake is orange, and I want to grate the orange peel to help make his birthday cake.
Oh.
And the little ones would get it. If I ask, why is this important to you, I start getting behind the position. So if your position is, I want the orange, your interest is, I'm hungry. Your interest is, I'm baking a cake. And the magic of working with people is to get beyond the position, I want this, to why is that important to you? Is it respect? Is it profit for the company? Is it service to, you know, young basketball players? Why is that important to you? And once you start uncovering that, there are a whole lot of different ways to share that orange. And you can end up with people happier with the solution than if you did the obvious, which is, well, we're just going to cut it in half.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that. That is an incredible example. I love it. And what an empowering message that you can give to these young children in conflict resolution. That is just incredible.
Uh-huh. And it's all about asking why.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds really simplistic, but even as an adult, you know, you find yourself in a conundrum with your spouse or your child or somebody you work with, and stopping and saying, wait a minute, I need to understand something. You know, why is this important to you? Not to me. I know why it's important to me. Why is it important to you? What is it about this thing? And I notice when I'm in conflict, I tend to lead with my why, and people don't always get it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll find myself saying, it's important to me because the position isn't enough information, at least not mm-hmm. for me. So when I'm dealing, even if it's not conflict, so say it's an organization and a committee and they're designing a new program for what they do, and getting underneath, you know, we want to build this program. Well, what is it about that program that's really important? What's the result you want? Is it an experience? Is it an outcome? Is it what? Why is that so near and dear to your heart? Because when you have agreement around that, oh, people will rally and make it happen. And that's what I do for a living.
That's wonderful. I really love that. And I can see that you definitely have a great skill in being able to work with people on this level. And what a difference that you're able to make in the world by bringing these tools into these groups, these youth sports, and these various organizations that you work with.
Well, thank you. It helps if you like what you do.
You know, it certainly does. That is definitely a big key, is to be able to do what you like to do, to be able to follow your passion. And I can definitely see that you are passionate about that. And with that being said, I would like to ask you, what I know you've shared a little bit about what you love and how you love to help other people, but really, if you were to choose the thing that you are most passionate about with what you do, how would you summarize that?
Passionate about what I do. I think I love to help people succeed. That it's, mm-hmm. I remember when I realized I actually don't have a need to be the sage on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
I love being the guide on the side. And it's okay if the spotlight is on other people,
mm-hmm.
because their success is a reflection of my success.
Beautifully put. Thank you. I love it. Well, Ruth, thank you so much for being on the show today and for sharing with us such wonderful tools that the listeners or readers can take from this and implement into their own lives and their own businesses. And I am excited for the difference that you being on this show can make in the lives of many others. Thank you so much.
Thank you for tuning in to the Rockstar Achievers Podcast. If you are looking to reach new levels of success by plowing through your roadblocks, outsmarting your competition, growing a flourishing business, or reaching unparalleled levels of performance, go to www.acceleratedresults365.com or email Catherine at Catherine@acceleratedresults365.com and learn how you can get started with Accelerated Results 365 today.